Hi, everybody. This is Pam from the podcast He Stutters, She Asks Him, the occasional male podcast series that I do. You can find this podcast link to the blog, Make Room for the Stuttering, and it's also freely downloadable on iTunes. Today, I'm excited and with the opportunity to speak with a friend of a friend who is going to share parts of his story. So I want to say hello to John. Hey, John, how's it going?
It's going well, Pam. How are you doing up there in upstate New York?
I'm doing good. I just a little while ago came back in from a 3 mile walk jog, and it's just amazing that can still be done at this time of year. So I'm doing well, and
excellent.
Yeah. So to get us started with our conversation, would you mind introducing yourself to us, your full name, where you're from, and what you do to keep yourself busy?
Sure. My name is John Paskovich. I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, which is about an hour and a half from the American border, and I work as a documentary photographer and filmmaker.
Oh, wow, that's cool. How long have you been doing that kind of work?
Well, a very long time. Very, 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 very long time. I've been doing that since 1978. I haven't had a regular job since then.
A regular job. You know,
you
don't consider this to be a regular job?
No, because I think I've been on the pension all my life, and in a couple of years I'll have to work.
Oh.
I'm exaggerating. I've been freelancing as an independent photographer and filmmaker, a long time, many, many years. As I said, since 1978. So, mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate to last this long. Every day I wake up, I'm still afloat.
What drew you into that field?
I was going to go to graduate school. I majored in the social sciences and anthropology and sociology in college. We say university up here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to go to graduate school, but I stuttered severely, and so the idea of trying graduate school with a severe stutter just knocked me back, and I took a couple of years off, and I traveled a lot, and while traveling, I picked up a still camera. And I found that I enjoyed observing all the things, all the cultural things that I studied, and I got a favorable response to my photographs, and so instead of going to graduate school, I studied photography and film. And so I did that.
Did you study it formally?
Yeah, I went to Ryerson University in Toronto.
Mhm.
Yeah, and so I started working as a still photographer, And I've after a few years, I moved into documentary film.
Mm-hmm.
But just and we're talking about stuttering here, so I just want to mention that I've always liked film, and so while I was in Ryerson, I said I'd like to be a documentary film director, and I still remember one of my instructors saying, "Well, John, you know, with your speech, maybe you should get into the technical side, like lighting or editing or something, because as a director, that requires a lot of talking. You'll have to do interviews. You'll have to set up appointments, and I wouldn't recommend it, John."
Do you recall how that made you feel?
It made me feel, of course, badly. I felt badly about it. It's like I can sport. And instead of playing first string, I was being demoted to third string. Perhaps that isn't a perfect analogy, but he thought that because of my speech, I was making a real foolish choice, which would only cause to me more heartbreak. And so I at the same time, I'm a kind of a obstinate kind of guy, and so. I remembered what he said, and I just when you're third string, you want to try harder. So I did. And perhaps, like a lot of stutters that I know, I probably overcompensated.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you say anything back to him? Because I'm just, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking to myself, God, that would have pissed me off. And I think I might have, you know, like tried to prove him wrong, you know.
Yeah. It pissed me off, but I didn't want to get into it because I was quite insecure myself, and so he just added to my insecurity, and I pretty well stayed silent.
Mm-hmm. But you went forth with your goal of becoming a documentary filmmaker, despite what he said.
Yes.
So how?
I did.
How did you go about that?
Well, I felt good. What I found doing. Photography and filmmaking, it's the product that counts. So you're only as good as your last job.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do a good job, you start developing a bit of a reputation. And in this area of work of film and photography, as long as you get the job done, then people will hire you. Stuttering becomes a secondary
mm-hmm.
thing, and in a way, I found it sort of adds to my character in a way, you know, because there aren't that many stutterers out there who are working as film directors or still photographers. There are, of course, but there aren't that many, and so people are often taken aback, and it's a kind of an icebreaker in a way.
So how do you approach that? Like when you were first breaking in, and you decided that despite what that professor said that this was what you were going to go after, as you began to approach people to get them interested in your work, how did you deal with the stuttering?
Well, I must say I didn't deal with it that well, I must say, because what I'm saying now only came many years later. But at the beginning, when I started working, I was out in the workforce. When you're doing film and photography, you're always interacting with people, and I would always obsess about my stuttering. I wanted to talk better, and I always wanted to talk better, and I was always shooting myself in the foot, because as we all know, very often the more you try to speak more fluently, the worse your stutter gets.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I was in that situation, but I had incredible talents of denial. that this isn't bothering me, but in fact it was, and it took its toll on me, because I was always anxious. Like, I wanted to speak well.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on it now, that was a major error. And actually, so that went on for a long time, and it was only when I decided finally, I had the courage or the age or whatever, I decided, well, I'm gonna make a film on stuttering. People always say in the film business, put your film where your mouth is. Well, I literally did that. I said, well, you know what? Something which has always interested me, and I've obsessed about, is stuttering. So I'm going to do a film on stuttering. And it was only when I did that and I found out all the resources which were out there, stuttering organizations, the internet, the stuttering homepage that Judy Custer runs. It was only then that I started saying, I'm going to talk. I'm going to let go. I'm going to embrace my stuttering. I'm not going to wrestle it with it constantly. I'm going to see stuttering as my rather irritating friend. And we all have irritating friends.
We certainly do. We certainly do. But I certainly want to learn more about the film, but what I really want to know is, like, when you first started out and you had to talk to people that you wanted to have them hire you as a filmmaker, not necessarily like how did you deal with your stuttering, but like when a potential customer, I don't know if that's the right word, but when a potential client, met you, and how was it to them for you as a director to be a person who stutters? I mean, did it interfere with your ability to, you know, seal the deal?
Absolutely, yeah, I absolutely, because as we know, people are ignorant about stuttering. They might think it's a mental illness or it's some kind of a form of epilepsy, or there's a whole gamut of reaction. And yeah, it was hard. I would say the worst part of it was that making cold calls on the phone. So I would make a cold call to the commissioning editor, and before I could actually say my name, the phone would be hung up on me. The person at the other end would hang up. So that was a humiliation, and people would say things after I met them finally. I remember one person saying, when we spoke on the phone, I imagined you looking differently. You know, like what does that mean?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, like what do you mean? But the worst things were cold calls, and in the media business, everybody's on the go. Everybody is, you know, finger snapping, uptight, out of sight. You know, they're like, you know, rocking and rolling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stutter, it confuses them, because most of the people that they work and deal with are quite fluent, glib, flippant, and then a stutterer shows up, and you know,
and we rock their world because they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do.
No, they absolutely don't know what to do, and they associate stuttering with, you know, low intelligence or
mm-hmm.
nervousness or all those cliches which we're familiar with.
Yeah. So did you ever get an answer to a person who said, you know, I thought you would be, you know, you would look something different? Like, you know, like when you asked them, well, what did you mean by that? Did they ever describe to you what they thought you would look like based on?
No, well, not specifically, but I remember a couple of years ago, one guy who is retired now said, you know, when you walked in and I spoke with you on the phone, and then you walked in and with your film idea, he said I didn't know what to do.
So do you find yourself then and now? Do you find yourself educating people as to, you know, what they should do, like what you prefer, how people should respond?
I try when it's possible. I try to use humor more than, you know, lessons. Or I try to make it humorous.
Mm-hmm. Give me an example.
If it's cold out, you know, I might say, you know, I'm not freezing. I stutter, so, you know, but if you guys want to offer me a coffee, you know, go ahead. That type of thing. All depending on the situation.
Right. Have you ever had an experience, because I have, where, you know, somebody has reacted negatively or out of ignorance, and, you know, they've either laughed or mimicked you in some way, and then you say, excuse me, you know, I stutter, and then they like become like mortified and embarrassed and you know, they profusely apologize. Has that ever happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's happened. That actually happened on one of my first jobs after graduating, not from photography, but just graduating from university in the social sciences. I got my first job that I had was working at the what was then called the Manitoba School for the Retarded. That word isn't used anymore. It's called the Manitoba School now, but this is back in the 70s, and the place was still called the Manitoba School for Retarded. So I had my I got a job there. It was a low level entry. It was basically doing recreational things with the people there and taking them out for walks and recreations and that kind of things. But I remember I started working there in the morning, and I had a good morning. And in the and it was time for lunch, so I went to the staff cafeteria, and I stood in line at the cafeteria, and I ordered whatever I ordered, shepherd's pie, mashed potatoes, or whatever, but I couldn't say shepherd's pie. And so I still remember the woman across the counter admonishing me, saying, "You can't eat here. Go back to your ward."
Oh, jeez.
So she hadn't seen me before, because that was my first day of work. So she equated me and my speech as being mentally challenged. So it took me a while to convince her that I, in fact, was on staff. and she, of course, apologized profusely, but I think I still had to pay for the shepherd's pie.
Oh, she didn't give it to you for free? Do you think that the world has made strides in better understanding stuttering, or better understanding how to deal with us, or how to listen to us, or how to respond, or is it kind of the same old thing?
I would say it's the same old thing, but I think it's changing slowly. I think that the more stuttering is in the media, the better it is, because the media has such a strong influence on populations. So certainly a film like the King's Speech helped somewhat. I've got some reservations with the King's Speech, and I think
I did too.
I think any time stuttering is out there in the open, that somebody's talking about it, it's good. And now that we have multi-channel multi-channel TV and the internet, so the chances of somebody talking about the stuttering are so much more than when I grew up. Mm-hmm. I grew up in absolute isolation.
Isolation.
As far as knowing anything about stuttering, knowing anybody else who stuttered, getting any kind of information about stuttering, it was a wasteland where I was. And I live in a city, that has it's a population of about 700,000.
Mm. So as a kid, as a young person, you didn't get any therapy or support?
No, I didn't get any speech therapy or support. My family was an immigrant family, and so the kind of notion of support is my mother would ask a doctor or something. Mm-hmm. And he would tell her something, and that was it. And as far as speech therapy in any kind of schools that I was attending, there wasn't any. So I went through it essentially without speech therapy my whole life, which I found out it isn't unusual at all. In fact, it's probably the norm.
Yeah, yeah. So you never even had any therapy even as an adult?
No. I didn't have any therapy as an adult. I started doing my own therapy and learning about stuttering when I wanted to make a film on stuttering. So it was actually a kind of a selfish motive. I had to make a film. I wanted to get paid to learn about stuttering.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, kill two birds with one stone. Why? Sure. Why not? Right?
Yeah. By the way, plus it's a topic that, as I said, which was always there for me. You know, mm-hmm. When you wake up in the morning, it's there. The topic is there. But it was only when I was older that I could actually face it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and tell all the world on film or whatever that I stuttered. But of course, it was an open secret. Everybody knew that I stuttered, and most people really didn't care.
Yeah, but that's not what we think, right? We think you know, the world is like, you know, looking down at us, or they're hanging on our every word, when in fact we care so much more than the world does.
Absolutely. Yeah, most people have other worries. They have to pay a mortgage. They have sick relatives. Their kids are doing badly in school or have some behavioral problems. You know, there's other shortcomings that people worry about besides our stuttering.
Exactly. So, tell us a little bit about this film. How did you go about doing it, and what's the name of it? And
it's an older film. It's about what is it, about five or six years old now. It's called Unspeakable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a film about stuttering, about the nature and history of stuttering. I covered the waterfront. I interviewed a lot of people in Canada, in the USA, and in Britain, and I interviewed stutterers and people who work with stutterers, speech therapists, speech pathologists, and then I concluded at the end that stuttering is, you know, it's a deficiency. No, I wouldn't say deficiency. Mm-hmm. It's something that we're always trying to get over, but I think the so-called fluent society should get over it too, because stuttering is, you know, stuttering is what it is. It's a medical condition as a bad leg is, or bad hearing, or hair loss, or you know, humpback, or acne, or anything. I mean, it's part of the human condition, and it's not so much that stutterish should get over it, because by the time they're adults, they can't get over it. So the outside world should get over it.
How did you find all these people to interview for the film?
Well, I attended for the first time a National Stuttering Association conference in Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you just kind of surprised me. You know, the number of people there from all walks of life, and I never knew such a thing it existed. And then I went to a stuttering conference in Canada here, and I met people here as well. And some of the people that I met in Anaheim were from Britain.
Ah.
So I got in contact with the Brits, and those three countries I had a whole list of people I could contact.
Was everybody more than willing to be interviewed and part of the film?
Yeah, everybody was more than willing and very, very, very helpful in suggesting other people that I might want to interview. As you know, what I found is that once you get people to expose their stuttering and get involved in a self-help group or be a part of an organization like the NSA in the States or the CSA in Canada or the BSA in Britain, you can stop them from talking about stuttering very much as I am doing now.
That's right. We stutterers can't stop talking, right?
right. Because we have a lot to say.
We sure do, and it sometimes just takes us a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Why did you choose the name?
Unspeakable?
Yeah.
Oh, Unspeakable. Well, just that double meaning of the word, literally, it's unspeakable, that you can't speak properly. And I also the other meaning that it connotes, unspeakable, it's like a horror. You know, it's something evil. It's uttering is an unspeakable thing. You know, don't even talk about it. Put the elephant, the pink elephant, by the sofa there.
Mm-hmm. Do you?
And don't talk about it.
Do you still believe that?
No, absolutely not. No.
But you did at the time, because that's why you chose that title.
Absolutely. Yeah. How I deal with my stuttering, there has been a huge change.
Mm-hmm. And what did you learn about yourself going through the process of making a film about stuttering?
Well, what I learned, I learned a lot. I learned that everything that I was doing prior to that film was wrong.
Really?
When it came to stuttering, everything. Because I was ignorant when it came to stuttering. I thought that me not being able to overcome my stuttering was a deficiency on my part. And I believe what some people said, ignorant people, who said, John, by this time, I would think you would have stopped stuttering, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I, you know, I, I didn't know. So why am I still stuttering? You know, like, well, you know, gee whiz. And you know, and it bothered me. And now I know why I'm still stuttering.
Why?
Why? Because almost 100% of people who are stuttering into when they enter adulthood will be stutterers their whole life. It's just the way it is. That's the way the neurology became you know, hardwired, and that's it. You can modify your stuttering, you know, but as far as wanting to eliminate it, that's only a source of frustration and heartbreak.
Mm-hmm.
It never happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, supposing that they came up with the magic pill that would eliminate the stuttering, would you take it?
Well, it depends on the pill. All the pills that I know are out there that the people have taken for our stuttering, they haven't really helped that much. They have, like, you know, it improved my stuttering by 15% or 20%. They have these statistics. So I don't have any confidence in the pills now, and many of them have so many bad side effects. But people are desperate. They hate their stuttering so much that they're willing to take a chance. But to answer your question, if there was a pill that would stop stuttering, if it didn't have any side effects, if it was like an aspirin, I would take two.
But you wouldn't be the same person anymore. I mean, you've come to identify part of yourself as John, who, well, stutters, right?
Yeah, but you know, I've been quite adept at voluntary stuttering, so I can volunteer to stutter at any time.
you got me there.
Just ask.
but we aim
to please. That's another thing. Stutterers are always pleasing their listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing that. I was pleasing my listener.
What do you mean?
I will be fluent for this person, because this is stuttering makes this person uncomfortable. I will really, really try to be fluent for this person. You know, and so, like, why should I be fluent for a particular person? That's like saying somebody who's in a wheelchair, you know, I will stand up and walk for this person because, you know, I want the job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then the person in the wheelchair falls flat on their face, and the person who stutters will only stutter more.
Mm-hmm.
Or else, well, here's another thing that happens, and very often the person who tries to speak fluently, who wants to stutter less, they come across as a robot, and so all their personality is gone, and so the person who might hire them or meets them for the first time, They don't say, "Well, that person stutters." They say, "Oh, that person's kind of weird."
right. So right.
I've seen that happen with others I've known. People have actually asked me about a person I know who stutters, who is always trying to control their stuttering, and I won't mention the name. He and I would meet somebody, And I would introduce them, and you know, I might or might not stutter, and then this person wouldn't stutter, but then the other person, after I see them again, the person I introduce, the person who hides the stuttering, the listener would say, that you're our friend. He seemed kind of odd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, but well, I'm not going to say, well, no, he's not really odd. He's perfectly normal, but he was really trying to be fluent. He tries to be fluent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's why, so it becomes his secret. I know his secret, but he doesn't want others to know his secret.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly can relate to what you just said about, you know, speaking with pauses and prolonging our words and sounds can certainly make us fluent. But you're right, it takes all the affect and the emotion and the animation out of our voice.
And it's very, and you're always anxious. As you're walking on these eggshells, you just might crack them.
Exactly. And I would much rather, you know, be, you know, have some inflection and some tone and some, you know, animation to my voice than be that flat, monotone, robotic person that doesn't have any energy or any life. And you know, if I stutter sometimes, then so be it. And
yeah, that's the attitude that I take. But at the same time, I still I still monitor my speech, because sometimes I just absolutely forget about my stuttering, and my old conditioned responses start kicking in. Like right now, when I'm talking to you,
mm-hmm.
I'm not at all worried about my stuttering, but I can now that I stop myself, I can see that I could be speaking in a much slower pace, where I can get my thoughts to together a little bit more, and not just be sort of letting it rip.
Mm-hmm.
I have a bad tendency to let things rip, and that's something that I'll be that I have to continuously remind myself, because I grew up with this compensating factor. If I can just get through my thoughts fast enough, I'll be okay.
Yeah, but you just made
which is the opposite of robotic speech. That also makes me kind of odd.
Well,
when I do that, it makes me appear frenetic or something, you know.
Well, has somebody told you that you appear frenetic or odd, or are you just presuming that?
You know what? I'm presuming that. How is my presumption, Pam?
Well, it's wrong, because you're not odd. You're not frenetic. You know, you're a person that's got, you know, a lot to say, and you've got a great sense of humor, and you're not censoring what you're saying. So your presumption is totally wrong.
Okay.
There.
but well, thank you. Could I have that in writing?
But you know what?
I'll carry that in my wallet.
Yeah, Pam says that, you know.
Yeah.
Blah, blah. But yeah. I wanted to just ask something. You made an interesting point. You said that while you've been talking with me, you haven't been worrying about your stuttering. So do you find that you can stutter and talk more freely to another person that stutters?
Well, I could talk more freely with a person who stutters. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you feel like that judgment isn't there?
Right. Yeah. Because exactly that. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm being judged anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? You're wrong. You are the weirdest, oddest fellow I have ever talked to.
Well, gee whiz.
Gee whiz.
I am lost for words.
Somehow I don't believe that.
I'm lost for words.
Yeah. Seriously, what would you advise younger people, kids, coming up that are, you know, just embarking on this journey?
Yeah, that's a hard one. That is a really hard one, because young people are starting off in their life, whether it's school or love or a job or being on a sports team, making friends, being one with the one, being. A part of a group, finding groups and other individuals who might share your interests. It's like every area of your life has possibility, and you don't want to screw it up. And when you're young, you're afraid that your speech will screw up everything, every area, from school, work, to love, friendship. And when you get that thought, it's like, well, it's hard to tell a young person to stutter openly. It's very, very hard. And I'm not a speech pathologist, but I think a young person should meet other young people who stutter, should meet older people who stutter, should meet people from all walks of life who stutter, and their parents, the parents of the young people, older siblings, should educate themselves about stuttering, so that they could talk about stuttering with the young person, so that it's out there, so it's not Charles Van Riper said, it's the untouchable. You have to touch the untouchable. It's not so bad, and that's what I would do. I would talk about it that's what I would do. All these things which I just did, all these things which I described, I never had.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I asked you the question, you said, "God, that's hard," but you answered it beautifully, you know, and. If anything, you know, hopefully younger people can, you know, hear us older people talking in stuttering and knowing that, you know, we still have lives and we can be successful and we can.
We can be very successful.
Mm-hmm. And we can be a film documentary maker despite what a stupid professor might say.
Oh, yeah.
You followed your heart. You followed your calling. And, you know, I'm sure that you don't regret that decision.
No, I don't. at all. Luck has a lot to do with things as well. Where we wind up and what we do. So it isn't just a matter of will. It's also a matter of luck.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're honest with ourselves and are honest with what we think are the abilities that we have, and if we exercise those abilities that we think we have, we will do all right.
And I did all right by inviting you to be a guest on this.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that we had this opportunity and that you shared.
I appreciate you asking me on, Pam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy your posts on. I think I first read your post. We haven't met, as we know. Perhaps mm-hmm. the audience doesn't know, but I enjoyed your first post. I think I read your posts on Stuttering Chat and then on Studel.
Mm-hmm.
They're very, 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 very well thought out.
Yeah, thank you. I have a lot to say, too.
Good.
But this has been a pleasure. And again, I thank you for being so honest and for sharing with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, I enjoyed it.
And this has been He Stutters, She Asks Him.